going to get into legislative and legal stuff. Nice job. Can you get this unhooked so I can get going?
No worries. You have a few minutes here.
I don't want to pull a plug on it and tell.
Oh, that's okay.
You okay?
Yeah.
Like a really exciting course.
It is.
Yeah. I love it.
Okay.
Lewis
is. Which way are you going?
I got something with Velcro here that's.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's what I'm looking for.
Right.
All right, so while John is setting up, I'll tell you a little bit about him. I first met John when I saw him at last year's ASA meeting, where he gave a talk on education and science. And he's back again. John is a professor at Purdue University, where he specializes in science education and chemistry, which I get excited about because that's my field. And John was involved with some recent proposals this year regarding the teaching of creation science, and that's what he's going to tell us about as soon as his computer comes to life. It's the revenge of the Max at this.
Yeah, the revenge of the Macintosh is after what, last night or whatever.
Yeah.
I wasn't using a PC.
I've seen the transition from PC to digital. I've never seen it work.
No. Me neither.
I'm John Staver from Purdue University, and I'm a science educator. I teach teachers how to teach science and do research on certain issues, and here to talk about it's much related to what Glenn discussed, except my setting is the legislative arena. Let's see if I can get this press, and there it goes. The Indiana General Assembly, one of the senators introduced a bill in January, and this is a synopsis of it. The teaching of creation, it's basically about a one-sentence bill. Teaching of creation science provides that that the governing body of a school corporation may require teaching of various theories concerning the origin of life, including creation science within the school corporation. That is pretty much the statement of the bill. And IGA stands for Indiana General Assembly. So those are sources that are going on. I'm going to have to point this way. This is a list of the of some of the things that happened. On the 4th of January, Senator Cruz, who's a Republican from northeastern Indiana, authored the bill and introduced it in the first reading, and it was referred to the Senate Committee on Education and Career Development. On the 5th and the 17th, other senators were added to the as co-authors to the bill. And then we start the discussion of it. And the first big discussion is the Education and Career Development Committee meeting, which occurred on January 25th. It was chaired by Senator Cruz, who is, again, a Republican. The committee listens to feedback from citizen speakers. Seven people spoke against the bill. Two people spoke in favor of it. And the committee then voted 8-2 to in favor of the bill and sent it to the Senate floor for consideration. Let's look at the kinds of things that were said in terms of the, first of all, the speakers' backgrounds. Those folks who spoke against the bill were a representative from the Indiana State Teachers Association, which is an organization that governors and administers teachers in the state of Indiana, a retired teacher, a Purdue University professor. I have no idea who he was. Yeah, I do. An Episcopal chaplain, a representative from the Center for Inquiry for Indiana, which is an education-related association, the Jewish Community Relations Council, somebody from Indiana Urban Schools Association, and those who were for it. There were two of them. One was in Advance America. And I don't really know much about Advance America, but it has some religious connections and works on behalf of schools and the operator of a blog. The points and the views expressed get to be interesting, too, at the committee meeting. First of all, those of us who spoke against, one of the main points is that creation science is simply not science, and it's not constitutional. One of the speakers pointed out very specifically that she felt it was an attempt to smuggle a specific religion into science class. And if I had said that, I would have said it's a specific version of a specific religion. But basically, that's the issue. Most of us, either in our testimony or in the questions that got asked, basically said that, look, this is acceptable in a comparative religion class or a philosophy class. It's just not acceptable in science class. And the sources of these are the videotapes that always go on in the legislature. And I'm very much indebted to the folks at the National Center for Science Education, Steve Michael in particular, who sent me CDs of all these things so I could actually sit and watch everything multiple times and get some specific information out of it. And then something that I said, and others did too later on, that this is going to cost Indiana school districts a whole bunch of money, given the legal precedents that we know that are already there. Points of and views expressed by those folks who spoke for the bill. Senate Bill 89, this is a local control bill, and it's not a state mandate, and therefore it's okay. You may agree or disagree with that, but this is what they said. It's a local control bill. The state is not mandating anything or forcing anybody to do anything. Local control. Districts can decide to do this or not. We like the idea of teaching various theories, which is okay. Then we get into the thing that Glenn's, I think, going to enjoy a little bit: operational science and historical science. One of the folks who spoke in behalf basically was very specific about this. Operational science proves things. And that involves observation and experiment in the classical control variable way and that sort of thing. Historical science extrapolates from modern observations and can't prove or verify anything. And they used the specific example of radioactive dating. So I thought you'd enjoy that point. And basically argued that the extrapolations back in time are meaningless in terms of science, and that in a really extreme way, evolutionary theory is historical science because we've never observed it, and that evolution and theory can't be proven or verified, and really both of them are unscientific. And so this is one of the two people who spoke for the bill. All right. A little bit later, on January 30th, the bill was amended on the floor of the Indiana Senate. This is the original statement of the bill, which I showed you before. This is the senator who amended it, and this is very interesting because a Democratic senator from Bloomington, Indiana, proposed an amendment to require the teaching of origin of life theories from multiple religions. And the question arose in discussion, was this a, quote, poison pill strategy? Here's what the amended bill looked like. The governing body of school corporation may offer instruction in various theories of origin of life. The curriculum for the course must include theories from multiple religions, which may include but is not limited to, and there's the laundry list, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Scientology. Again, newspaper horse.
No, I don't think the language says the original one may require and the amended version may offer. So that... Does that mitigate that a little bit? That they can if they want, if they don't have to, they don't.
Yeah, there really wasn't much publicity about that difference, and so I don't think anybody probably even noticed it. They're much more concerned about the teaching of it. But you're right, that is a subtle difference in the bill, and I hadn't noticed that until now.
Well, they don't include scientism or secularism.
Scientology.
Okay.
Then on January 31st, yeah, go ahead.
Just because of that, I thought, well, we can't teach evolution. Never mind.
Yeah.
Just a pickiness.
Okay, on January 31st, the amended bill passes the Senate by a vote of 28 to 22, and the bill then moves to the House of Representatives. Now, the decline and, quote, death of Senate Bill 89. The Speaker of the House, Mr. Brian Bosma, and Mr. Benning, who are both Republicans, Mr. Benning is the chair of the House Education Committee, were very disinclined to proceed any further with this. They really did not like the bill and didn't want to really move on it or do anything with it that would lead to a passage. But they have interesting rationale. So Speaker Bosma sends Senate Bill 89 to the Rules Committee, not to the Education Committee, where it normally would have gone. What this does is a procedure that assures that the House can't vote on the bill or won't vote on it in this session. Because basically the bill needed to be approved by whatever committee it went into by the full House by March 5th this year in order to be passed by the General Assembly, because the General Assembly had lots of work to do and the whole legislature is in a rather brief session this past spring anyway. And so basically what they did was to kill the bill by a parliamentary procedure of what committee it was assigned to. Now what's their rationale? First, Mr. Bosma stated very clearly in interviews that he really had no disagreement with the concept of the bill itself. Secondly, he stated that he was, even in light of his agreement with the concept of the bill, very reluctant to micromanage local school curricula. Because remember, this was originally a local school bill, and it remained so. There was no state mandate. And thirdly, he was reluctant to take action that would likely involve the state in a large lawsuit. And actually, it might have been the state, but it would have been every school district that adopted it and decided to teach that way. Mr. Benning, again, was very open about his creationist beliefs. And did not think that current state law prevented schools from adding it to classes. The amended bill, he also thought that the amended bill would require the teaching of original life theories according to multiple religions, and it would be literally impossible to find any teachers who are qualified to teach all those origins stories from all the different religions that were listed. And so the notion of unqualified teachers was raised by Mr. Benning. And this is really interesting. He noted that parents have the option to send their children to learn about creationism at private schools with state-supported vouchers. That's a relatively new thing that has passed the legislature. And if any of you are familiar with Lemon v. Kurtzman from the Supreme Court 40 or 50 years ago, that's the case in which the Lemon test was actually developed. I'm not a lawyer, and if somebody is, I'd like to hear some reaction to it, but I see that as just waiting to be a court case. Because basically, parents can ask the state to, or the, I see the state of the school district for public funds to send their kids on vouchers to private schools, and then if they're taught thing, whatever they're taught. Now the question is, somebody would have to come forward and complain about what's being taught. Because that was the entire sort of theme of the Lemon v. Kurtzman case, which the Supreme Court decided some years ago. Now, the probable resurrection, because Mr. Bosma said he is going to, of Senate Bill 89 is likely going to be by an academic freedom strategy, the idea of teach the strengths and weaknesses. And here's a version of the academic freedom strategy from a group that would support this. Whoops, wait a minute, we back up. Went the wrong way. Across America, freedom of science, scientists, teachers, and students, the question Darwin's coming under increased attack by self-appointed defenders of theory of evolution who are waging a malicious campaign to demonize and blacklist anybody who disagrees with them. I guess I'm one of them. You can help by signing the academic freedom petition strategy or petition and standing up for free speech. And there's we the undersigned citizens want the strengths and weaknesses of Darwinian evolution taught. And then there's the website that you can go and get the bill or get the information and do that. I'll give you a moment just to read it.
I didn't understand. Did you say you were for or against that?
You'll find out in a little bit. I teach a lot by inquiry. And I often answer questions with questions, and my students don't like it, but they have to learn to put up with it. The First Amendment. The First Amendment basically says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, that's the first clause, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, that's the second clause, or abridging the freedom of speech. And so the First Amendment, again, protects the various rights of freedom of religion and et cetera and so forth. What's really going on here is a legal strategy that seems to be pitting the first and third clauses of the First Amendment against each other. In other words, we have academic freedom to teach this, but we also cannot make a law respecting an establishment of religion. And actually one of the major organizations that is working with this is the Discovery Institute, which is a longtime participant in these arguments and discussions and whatever you wish to call them. And so objective, but a less controversial description of academic freedom. It comes from Encyclopedia Britannica, and it's the freedom of teachers and students to teach, study, and pursue knowledge and research without unreasonable interference or restriction from law, institutional regulations, or public pressure. So, it's only fair to teach the strengths and weaknesses of evolution. That's basically their argument, and no, I'm not in favor of teaching this. Well, in one, I am in favor of teaching the strengths and weaknesses of evolution, but you're going to see why I'm not in favor of that. Science teachers who employ inquiry teaching strategies and teach nature of science concepts already do this. They already do this without ever mentioning strengths and weaknesses. Because what is scientific inquiry, and what are the ideas around nature of science? The core concepts of nature of science are things like this. Science's way of knowing has a specific goal, Empirical evidence is vital. It's necessary. Without empirical evidence, you can't do science. Subjectivity exists. Yeah, we try to be objective, but there is always subjectivity in scientific inquiry and the development of the knowledge that comes from that. And the this source is from Norman G. Letterman, who is at Illinois Institute of Technology, a valued colleague of mine and probably the world's foremost expert and researcher on nature of science and nature of science issues. Nature of science core concepts, in other words, scientific knowledge, it's constructed by different methods and procedures. And one of the things that Norm talks about now is that there is no the nature of science. There is nature of science because there are various disciplines approach their work via different processes and procedures. The knowledge is both tentative and durable. And evolution, as an example, certainly speaks to that or represents that. It has limits. No empirical evidence. 3 minutes. Okay. It's influenced by social and cultural factors, and it takes several unique forms. Facts, hypotheses, laws, and theories. And one of the big discussions among the two sides is what a theory is. In the lay public, a theory is simply an idea or maybe a hypothesis. I have a theory that, whereas in science, it's a vastly different thing. And again, sources, Norm. Knowledge of scientific inquiry, again, begins, but doesn't necessarily result in testing hypotheses. It's not a single sequence of steps. Etc. and so forth. Data don't equal evidence. Explanations are developed from evidence and what's already known. And comments and questions. Yeah, you were in the back. So are you?
Me?
Yeah. In other words, am I in support of this or not?
Well, I mean, you said you weren't, but
yeah.
If you just look at the bullet statement, there's nothing you said that I don't see why you couldn't sign up for that. That's what I'm.
Basically, I'm saying the idea of strengths and weaknesses is like a, it's just to set up a specific controversy that somehow, scientific knowledge is always tentative and always changing. We never, that's not what scientists do. They don't try to prove things anyway. We try to disprove them. We try to find the problems with them and revise them and move on.
But there's, of course, people that argue against that philosophy. David Goldstein from Caltech says it's a horrible philosophy. Says lots of physicists do that, but I hate that.
He may hate it, but that's the way it gets done. And so, in a sense, basically, it's like trying to set up a kind of a dichotomy. It's got weaknesses. Are those weaknesses, or are they merely things that we don't know that if we find out, it's going to continue to help things? Okay?
Yeah, still.
Okay. Wait a minute, let's work behind you and then...
Yeah, I had a question about the wording of the bill that passed and then...
Sure.
...in committee. Do I understand correctly they said you may teach the controversy?
Those,
you don't have to teach
the controversy. Right, those were the words. You may.
But if you do teach the controversy, you must teach all of these options or
yes.
Many of these options.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it.
So was it poison pill?
Yes. In my view, it is. Yes.
I'm semi-ambivalent about
yeah.
I mean, in the real sense of the word, I'm equally strong
yeah.
on both sides because, in dealing with so many kids who come out of high school who have been taught, answers in Genesis, I can't tell you how many people. We just had a guy who came to our table. What do you think about answers in Genesis? I have all this stuff I've got to deal with all the time. At the same time, one of the rationales behind our course is that we've got to talk about it.
Right.
We actually had, not everybody at the college has the same point of view on the sciences, but... There has to be a sense in which both sides have got to let the other talk about it. And without that dialogue, it's so polarized. It's hard
yeah.
to know.
I think it's good. That's a good comment. That's a good word,
yeah,
polarized.
The thing is, it would be great to say teachers who are scientists should be able to teach origins as their consciences allow. And let the marketplace of ideas or really let the realities of science try to sort through which is really best. I understand why you're on that panel, and I probably would have too, to try to stop that. But on the other hand, I know from experience that's just polarized folks who are now convinced that you're the devil because you know what I'm saying?
I've heard that in a not very respectful way multiple times.
Yeah, it's hard to know where to stand on.
Yeah.
Now, you didn't mention the Dover, Pennsylvania case and how that
actually, I did in the testimony. You see it because I mentioned the Dover case specifically in the 3 minutes that I had to, that we all had to give, had to do that, and pointed out that that the Dover School District was given a $2 million legal bill from the plaintiffs as well as their own, and the plaintiffs' legal team graciously cut the fee in half, so they only owed $1 million plus their own thing. And basically, the pragmatic thing, not any of the, because the two Republican House members were basically saying, okay, well, I don't have any conceptual problems with this bill, but they had a lot of problems with putting Hoosier citizens and Hoosier school districts at risk, at financial risk, if this were going to go through and the lawsuits would follow. Yeah, back there.
Yeah, full disclosure, I'm Casey Luskin from Discovery Institute, and I appreciated you opposed SB 89. We opposed SB 89 as well. We thought both the original version and the revised version were somewhere between inane and insane. I mean, they thought that the solution to not teaching creation science, which is religion, is to bring more religion into the classroom, which didn't make any sense to me. So I guess my question, though, is you suggested that the Academic Freedom Bill from the Academic Freedom Petition website would be pitting the first clause of the First Amendment, which prohibits establishing religion, as you correctly said, against the free speech clause. Have you read that bill, the Academic Freedom Bill, or that website?
No, I haven't.
Okay, great. So there's a bill on the website. Maybe you can go to that website,
Academic
Freedom Petition, and you can read sort of a sample Academic Freedom Bill. And it says in Section 7, nothing in this act shall be construed to promote any religious doctrine, promote discrimination for or against a particular set of religious beliefs, or promote discrimination for or against religion or non-religion. And just to give our perspective, if you don't object... our perspective is that kind of a clause, which to my knowledge has been in every academic freedom bill that's ever been out there, basically says if you try to teach religion, it's not protected by this bill. It only protects the teaching of science. And so if a teacher is going to try to bring creation science or some religious view, they are not going to be protected by this bill. They're going to be completely subject to all of the case law and laws out there that prohibit advocating religion. And as a result, there have been two academic freedom bills that have been passed at the statewide level, one in Louisiana. It's been on the books for 4 years now without a lawsuit, which says a lot, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, didn't Tennessee pass one also? Or
this year, yes.
Right. And I think that's going to be the strategy with Indiana. And the question will be if and when we get a court case, what will be the legal arguments? And as I confessed before, I am not an attorney or a legal expert, but just as a person who's involved in this, that seems like a point of a strategy that could be done. I may be correct, I may not be. We'll all have to wait and see. Yeah.
This may address what he just said, what he said earlier, he brought up the Dover case. I would hope, like, that you would consider the words intelligent design and creation science two completely different things.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Okay, and I think that's why you're against the Discovery Institute, because they're two completely different things.
That's true. Actually, we oppose pushing ideas in public schools as well.
Yeah.
These kinds of academic freedom laws are simply cover the evidence for and against Darwinism, not getting into alternative theories. But I don't want to interrupt you, but just a point of information there.
Yeah. Okay, I was missing you. Sorry about that.
That's right. One concern I have is that, most teachers, or all teachers I know, and through my church experience, they like kids. They're not really scientifically oriented in the first place. So how are they going to be able to really be knowledgeable about teaching both sides when they come from a background that really isn't scientific?
All right.
Now, you talk about secondary school or just elementary?
Elementary.
Elementary, evolution isn't really taken up in the elementary school, but concepts that build into evolution are. Yes, ma'am.
I'm just curious, in your studies of science education in general, I found progressing for you that in general, in elementary and middle school, and even high school, everything is presented more as facts and indisputable. And then the further you go, I've been amazed at conferences, you know, everything is disputed and people are always questioning each other. So, you know, when you're in professional science, you're kind of like, it looks ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it needs it. Well, basically, what's wrong with there are a couple of things that are drastically wrong with elementary science these days. One, it's been pushed out of the curriculum by No Child Left Behind, and so I'll tell you my view there. Secondly, it's even longer than No Child Left Behind. It's always been a reading about science subject. I specialize by choice at first at Kansas State University for 18 years and then Purdue now for six to teach elementary students. I'm a former high school teacher. And what I teach them is what comes from the standards documents of the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the National Research Council. It's about standards-based, research-based education and curriculum that puts kids in the, because I think if we're going to look at scientific literacy and pursue it as a goal, then we know that most of us don't become scientists. I mean, technically, I'm not a scientist. I do research on teaching learning issues, and that's a version of science, but I'm not a physicist or a chemist. But the whole notion of that is if you have to ask yourself what's the most valuable thing that we can help kids come to understand and use, it's what Norm Letterman's been talking about. It's how to think like scientists think in solving problems, and what's the nature of scientific knowledge. Mm-hmm. What is nature of scientific knowledge? There I got caught saying the. Other questions? Are we out of time? Well, yeah.
I would say I definitely affirm, I think, everything you said about teaching about the nature of science and the tentativeness of science, but yet it's durable, and those are all very important things. In my readings of a lot of the literature on science education theory, there is a lot of talk about not just teaching inquiry within those areas, but also within specific subject matters. And there was, you may be familiar with this paper in Science from 2010 by Jonathan Osborne at Stanford that actually said that you should teach students, quote, to discriminate between evidence that supports, inclusive or does not support, exclusive or that is simply indeterminate. This whole paper is about teaching students to weigh arguments on different sides of scientific controversies. And I just like to hear your thoughts on, you know, within specific subject matter areas, is there not fairly good backing in the science education literature for teaching about different competing viewpoints on evidence?
Yeah, there's the whole notion of what's the evidence thing, and I agree with Jonathan. I mean, I know Jonathan really well, and he's a highly respected science educator. And so I don't have a problem with that. The idea, though, is again, keep it within the realm of science in terms of what's been historically done. And the legal system is going to work itself out. One way or another, but I'm just kind of sitting and waiting because I've thought ever since Indiana passed that voucher bill that someone will eventually complain and there'll be a court case. And if you want to know how I got into all of this, since my background's in chemistry, I was a professor at Kansas State University for 18 years, beginning in 1988. And in the late 1990s, I was asked to be a member of a 27-member expert committee that developed the science standards for the Kansas State Board of Education. At the first meeting, I was elected a co-chair, and the rest is history.
All right. We are, this is our session.